Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello, and a very warm welcome into Tech Talk, RNIB Connect Radio's regular journey into the world of accessible technology from a blindness and low vision perspective. I'm your host, Dave Williams. Don't forget, of course, Tech Talk, it's your programme, and we're really keen to hear what you think. So do get in contact with us. That email address, as always, it's techtalk@rnib.org.uk. techtalk@rnib.org.uk for all your text comments, or how about sending us some audio? Always good to hear your voice. Do get in touch and settle in for another Tech Talk. Coming up this week, Tasneem Arshad speaks to Graham Longley of Aspire Consultancy, a technology company operating in the assistive technology arena. I'll be catching up with Hannah from RNIB's Technology for Life team about Welsh voice options for your technology. And we will be giving you another tip to help you get the most from your iPhone. So that's all coming up this week on Tech Talk. We talk about the Seeing AI app a lot here on Tech Talk for good reason. It can recognise items around your kitchen, even have a guess at how old you are. But Tasneem Arshad now explores how the Seeing AI app can be used with your photographs.
And thank you for tuning your ears into your mini demonstration of how to use Microsoft Seeing AI to browse photos on iOS devices, as Microsoft Seeing AI app is only available on iOS. For Android users, you can use Lookout or Envision. Open Seeing AI.
Seeing AI menu.
Here's the first screen that you may see.
Quick menu. Quick help. Recognizing English channel. Short text. Adjustable channel. Menu.
Okay, so that's all that's there. You've got a menu, it's recognizing English, there's a quick help, and it says the channel is short text, which is changeable, so you can switch that around. We're going to go into menu by doing a one finger double tap.
Menu, quick menu, close button.
So when we're in menu, we're going to have a quick nose to see what's in there.
Browse photos.
So the first
button.
One you come to is browse photos.
Help button.
Then you've got help.
Feedback.
Feedback.
Settings.
Settings.
Button. About. Button.
About.
About.
Okay, and that's it. So let's go back to browse.
Help. Browse photos.
Oh, browse photos.
Button.
I stand corrected. Okay, let's do a one finger double tap to get ourselves in there.
Photo. Yesterday. 15. 17.
Okay, so we've got a photo.
Quick help.
We've got quick
button.
Help. So this is the next screen that you will see once you're in the browse photos. And it should take you to your library that you have stored.
Browse photos. Back. Button.
So at the very top of the screen, you've got back.
Browse photos.
Then browse
heading.
Photos.
Quick help.
Then quick help.
Button. Photo. Yesterday. Probably horses in a fenced-in pasture. Monday, 12:04.
Okay, so it's given me a very brief description of some nature photos that I've got. So we could have a look in there. Let's carry on.
A grassy area with a body of water in the background. Monday, 10:53.
Okay, that sounds quite nice.
Probably a grassy hill with a stone wall. Monday, 10.
Another nature photograph, and you'll notice that it gives you the date and time after each photograph too.
Photo. Monday, 10:51.
Okay, so no description for that one. That's interesting.
One face. probably a person standing on a ledge overlooking a city. Monday, 10.
I think that was me when I was out hiking on the top of a hill. So that's kind of fairly accurate. Let's go back to the first photograph with the horses and see what's in there.
Browse photo. Quick photo. Yesterday. 15. 17. Probably horses in a fenced expanse.
So one finger scene. Double tap to go in there. And if you hear Microsoft's description, it always comes up with scene first because it's describing the scene to you. So let's see if it gives us any further information about these horses.
It's scene. Probably horses in a fenced-in pasture.
Okay, so we haven't got much more there.
Date. Monday. Toolbar. Reanalyze.
Okay, so
button.
The options here are reanalyze the photograph.
Delete.
We can delete
button.
The photograph.
Explore photo.
Or we
button.
Can explore the photograph. I'll come back to explore because that is a little bit tricky. So if you're not used to using the Scene AI for browsing pictures, I would leave the explore function until you're a little bit more familiar. And that's because it can be a little bit tricky when you're moving your finger around. So you can explore the photograph in more detail by moving your finger, and it comes up with an audible sound as well. And it'll hopefully give you a little bit more information. But I found it's quite challenging to get yourself out of that. So we will take a look at it in a while. Going back to the scene.
Probably horses in a fenced-in pasture.
Okay, so we've got the idea that it's actually, you know, horses. We know that quite well. I remember this photograph because it was taken fairly recently. The information that Scene AI is given is fairly accurate. The bits of information that's missed out is that these were two very miniature horses. They were red in colour, and that's the only bit it's missed, to be fair. But generally, overall, I would say that's pretty good. So let's go back now to the rest of the photo album and choose another photograph.
Back.
So we can
back.
Just do a
probably.
One finger double tap to go back.
Photo.
And now it's taking me back to the main menu of my photographs.
Photo. The 6th of October.
Okay, so that's not giving me a description of anything. Let's go in there and see if
expand.
It gives us anything.
Processing. Scene. A person standing in front of a building with pillars.
That's very interesting. So initially, when I was just on the photograph, it didn't give me any information. But when I did a one finger double tap and went into it, that sound you heard said processing. So it gives you like a little audible tune, and then it gives you a little bit more information. And again, we've got
date.
The date
toolbar, reanalyze
the option to reanalyze,
button. Delete,
delete the photograph,
explore photo,
and explore the photograph.
Button.
I hope you've enjoyed browsing pictures with me, and do let me know your thoughts and reflections on how you browse your pictures at techtalk@rnib.org.uk.
Tasneem Arshad joins us now. So, Tasneem, looking at your photographs, I mean, I remember as a kid, you know, my parents had those old big photo albums, you know, in the sideboard, and every once in a while, you know, those books would get dragged out and they were full of hard copy photos. Now, obviously, your demonstration there is using Seeing AI to explore photos on your device, but could you use this with those old photo collections that people might have squirreled away in drawers and sideboards and that kind of thing?
It's an interesting idea, Dave. I don't see why not. You could certainly see what sort of image recognition it did. It'd be interesting to try it out. Maybe that's room for another demo, and just seeing if I've got any of those, you know, any old photographs lying around in those thick albums, as you've mentioned. And yeah, I could certainly give it a whirl and see, but I don't see why not. It's you won't know unless you try.
Okay. And I mean, are there any sort of limitations that you want to highlight with the way in which You can explore the photographs on your phone when you're sort of moving around and trying to explore the objects within a photograph.
I think, you know, the one thing that I didn't demo was the explore function. And I find that a little bit not as user friendly, I guess. I mean, you can go into it and then you kind of get stuck in a bit of a circle with it. So maybe that feature could be looked at in a bit more detail by Microsoft. But generally speaking, it gives really good overall description. But as you heard in the demo, you know, it doesn't give in-depth detail, but it's enough to identify what the picture is. And if you can, you know, use partial memory as well, you might say, oh, yes, I remembered that picture. And this is the description that somebody cited gave me at the time, if you were with family or friends. But yeah, it's a good way of identifying what's in your library independently, I think, and to just to sift out what you want to keep and what you want to delete.
Okay, yes, because space is always at a premium, particularly on iDevices where you can't easily expand it. Does it matter if those photographs are a landscape or portrait?
I don't think so from what I've seen, but when you go into the explore mode, it changes it from portrait to landscape. So I don't know whether that makes it slightly more challenging when you're in that particular mode. I struggle to get myself out of that mode. So yeah, that's why I think a little bit more tweaking for that particular feature would be helpful.
Okay, well, we'd love to know how you access your photographs. I know photography is very popular in the blind community. Get in touch, techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Tasni Marshad, thanks very much. You're listening to Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio. I'm Dave Williams, and you could be forgiven for thinking that with a name like Dave Williams, I have Welsh connections, and you would be correct. My father was Welsh, and I have a very Welsh middle name, which if you can find that out, then you've done well. Joining me from RNIB's Technology for Life team to talk about Welsh-speaking technology is Hannah Rowlett. Hello, Hannah. Have I said your surname correctly, firstly?
You have. Hi, Dave. It's lovely to be here with you today.
Welcome. So you work with the Technology for Life team. How long have you been with us?
Well, I've been with RNIB for a fair old number of years. I've worked in kind of several different roles, but I've been doing kind of digital inclusion or technology support for around 10 years.
And are you a Welsh speaker yourself, Hannah?
I'm not. Dwi'n dysgu Cymraeg, so I'm learning Welsh, but I'm sort of a beginner.
Right, okay. Well, it sounds like you're a lot further on than I am. Now, we often hear about talking technology on this programme, you know, the A lady and the G lady, and of course, many of us use screen reading software like JAWS, NVDA, VoiceOver. But typically, those things don't speak Welsh, and that could be a problem.
Yes, absolutely. So unfortunately, there are very few Welsh speaking kind of solutions. If you are a screen reader user or you rely on speech support, I'm afraid there aren't really too many kind of options. So unfortunately, there is no screen reader for smart devices. So if you've got an iPhone or an iPad or an Android smartphone or tablet, they're not going to be able to speak Welsh, unfortunately. However, there are a little couple of solutions that do speak Welsh.
Fantastic. Well, that's good to know, because it's important, isn't it, for all sorts of cultural and historical reasons. And, you know, people learn Welsh. If you go to school in Wales, you get taught that at school. So actually, this might be a key part of your education or employment even. So it's not just a nice to have, is it?
Yeah, no, absolutely. There are lots of people across Wales who are first language Welsh speakers. So they, you know, think and live their lives through the medium of Welsh. So being able to live their digital lives through the medium of Welsh as well is very important.
Indeed. All right. So why don't you just sort of run us through what options are available?
Yeah, absolutely. So like I said, unfortunately, there isn't that many options for kind of smart devices. But if you are a Windows user, then there are lots of various different Welsh language kind of support options. So you can get from the Microsoft website a Welsh language pack, which means that it'll turn the whole of your Windows interface into Welsh. So all of the menus, absolutely everything, Office, all of those facilities, instead of it being in English, It'll be in Welsh, and you can get that from the Microsoft website. There is also a Welsh synthetic voice. So this is a screen reader voice that has been designed to work with your access technology. So whether you are using JAWS, NVDA, Supernova or ZoomText, you can download the Welsh synthetic voice speech file that will then appear in your assistive technology so that the Welsh that you read on screen can be read aloud by the screen reader.
Yeah, and that's quite important, isn't it? Because if you just try and read Welsh with an English screen reader, it's going to sound like gobbledygook, let's be honest.
It is, absolutely, yeah. The most different languages around the world put their emphasis in different parts of the word. You know, they pronounce the letters of the alphabet in a different way. And so, yes, if anybody has listened to a English screen reader reading Welsh, it is absolute gobbledygook. So the screen reader will then basically put the emphasis in the right kind of part of the word and pronounce the vowels and everything in the right way to mean that the Welsh kind of makes sense to you.
Yeah, and all those sort of back of the mouth kind of sounds, like the sound that you don't typically get in English.
Absolutely. Yes, and Welsh has its kind of its own letters and things. So all of that is kind of pronounced kind of correctly with the Welsh voices.
All right. So where does this voice come from and how do people get it?
So the Welsh voice kind of has actually been something that's been kind of around for a while. So probably we're talking kind of over sort of 12 years ago. It was first created with funding from the Welsh government. We have had a few kind of problems with the voices and they haven't been kind of working correctly recently, but the issue has now been resolved. And so we're very pleased to say that, here in the Technology for Life team, we hold free licenses for people who are blind and partially sighted, who want to use it, you know, for personal use, for their own things. And we can also give it to not-for-profit organisations that want to kind of use it to further, access for people with sight loss. And all people would want to do if they would like a licence with a voice is to get in touch with the Technology for Life team here at RNIB.
Okay, well, we'll give those contact details at the end. You mentioned when we were planning this, Hannah, that there are a couple of other bits of Welsh-speaking technology out there.
Yes, there are. So, as I said, there aren't very many, but there is a device that's kind of made by VisionAid Technology. It's called the Read Easy Evolve, and you might have heard of it before. It's a standalone reading machine. So it's a device that has a camera on it, and you pop your piece of paper underneath, press a button, takes a photo of the document and then reads aloud the text. So the Read Easy Evolve is the only one that I'm aware of on the market that will also speak Welsh. So it will take a picture of your Welsh language letter and then read it back to you in Welsh.
Fantastic. So ideal for somebody who perhaps doesn't want all the complexity of Windows or maybe even the vagaries of trying to take a photograph with a mobile phone. This is a standalone unit and you just put your Welsh document under there. Presumably it needs to be typed, right? It needs to be a printed document. It's not going to be handwriting.
That's true, yes. So like your letters through the post, or maybe you get, you know, your newspaper that you want to put underneath. And like you say, it's a kind of a great sort of low-tech solution. It doesn't require the internet to run. It's great. And, you know, there, as I said, there are no screen reading solutions for smartphones or tablets. So quite often something that's really popular is, you know, using the apps to kind of scan and read. You know, if you scanned and read a Welsh language letter, it's not going to read it in Welsh because it's going to read it with the English screen reader. So if you're looking to do that, then this is kind of really the only piece of kit that will allow you to do that.
So remind us again, what's that one called?
It's the Read Easy Evolve from VisionAid Technology.
The Read Easy Evolve from VisionAid Technology. Excellent. Hannah, well, thank you so much. And I'm sure Welsh speakers will be delighted to hear about these options. And it's always interesting, even for those of us that don't perhaps speak a lot of Welsh, just to know that this is available, because you never know when you're going to get asked that question. So if people want to find out more, and maybe they want to try some of this technology, or they want to get one of those licenses for the Welsh voice to use with their screen reader, how should they get in touch with you?
Yeah, that's great. So you can get in contact with us by calling 0303 123 9999. Or you can email tfl at rnib.org.uk. We also have a Welsh language and technology fact sheet that is up on our website. So if you'd like to go and get that, you can just download it straight from there and have all the information at your fingertips.
Hannah Rowlett from RNIB's Technology for Life team. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
If you have a technology question, why not ask the Tech Talk team? Email now, techtalk@rnib.org.uk or tweet at RNIB Radio using the hashtag AskTechTalk.
Ricky Lomi has been in touch and would like to know, is Minecraft accessible with screen reading or braille technology? Well, we checked in with Ben Breen, RNIB's Accessible Gaming Immersive Design Research Officer, and the short answer, I'm afraid, Ricky, no. So definitely feedback to the developers. We've received a lovely email from Kim Silver. Thanks, Kim, for getting in touch. And Kim writes, I'm really enjoying your podcast and I'm thinking about upgrading from a Nokia C5 to an iPhone, but think I need a Braille keyboard. And the two options that Kim has narrowed that choice down to is the Orbit Writer and the Hable One. And Kim would like a little bit of advice. Well, of course, we did talk quite a bit about Hable One a couple of weeks ago. The Orbit Writer, I would say, is a more traditional Braille keyboard layout, a bit more like the Perkins layout that you might be familiar with from other devices. But if you can, Kim, not sure where you're located, if you can get along to an exhibition where one or other of those products is being demonstrated or exhibited, I always think it's a great idea if you can get hands-on, just so that you know what it feels like. You wouldn't expect a sighted person, for example, to buy a car without taking it for a test drive. I'll perhaps also check with the supplier just that they have a 30-day returns policy, so that if you do go for one of those options and find that it's not suitable, can you return it for a refund? Do let us know, Kim, how you get on. If you'd like to contact Tech Talk with a question or comment, we do welcome audio messages as well as regular old-fashioned email. You can send all of that to techtalk@rnib.org.uk. That's techtalk@rnib.org.uk. It's always exciting here on Tech Talk to feature individuals who have made a difference in the world of assistive technology, particularly when those people are blind or partially sighted themselves. Tasneem Arshad now speaks with Graham Longley from Aspire Consultancy to hear how the business has developed in recent decades.
Welcome, Graham, and thank you for joining us today on Tech Talk.
Thank you for having me. You're very welcome.
Good stuff. So you're a bit of a legendary entrepreneur, aren't you, Graham?
You said that. I'm not sure I've been described as that before, but I'll take it. Thank you very much.
It'd be really helpful if you can give us a brief summary about your background, Graham.
Okay, so working background, I suppose what led me to kind of get into entrepreneurship in the form that it's in now is back in 96, 97, I was working in a job that I didn't enjoy in the corporate world. I won't mention any names. It was in the banking sector, however, and I decided I would leave that particular job. And I'd been using assistive technology since 1989, since I went to university. I would have described myself at the time as a power user of assistive tech back in kind of 97. I'd been using JAWS for about a year at that time. And I thought I could possibly teach other people how to use JAWS, et cetera, and make a bit of money at the same time. Now, I actually started buying and selling things when I was at boarding school when I was about 12. So, and I come from a long line of kind of self-made, self-employed people on both sides of my family. So I guess it's kind of in my blood. So in 1999, I set up Aspire Consultancy with help from the Prince's Youth Business Trust, which I squeaked in. I think I was 31 at the time, and I think the cutoff was 31. And kind of the rest is history, I guess. So the company's still going and in more than one form now. So there's a commercial side to it. There's a not-for-profit side to it. So that's kind of, in a very nutshell, that's kind of how I got here, really.
Okay. And how difficult was it for you to go into business? I know you said that it's in your blood and it's always helpful and useful to know family members so you can tap into their resources. Did you have some help from family and friends, or was it mainly from the Princess Trust? Or I'm wondering what other resources you had access to that you utilized to get yourself set up?
I think from memory, it was mainly the Prince's Youth Business Trust and local kind of business link type, or a local business link type organization. They were called York. I'm based in York, by the way. York Business Enterprise or something like that. So, you know, I was fortunately, my overheads were quite low at the time. I was still living at home. And so I had that kind of cushion, really. But I think I had a grant and a loan from PYBT. And I think that was mainly it, and a bit of a leap, really, because obviously something you might be wanting to cover, but it was obviously coming off benefits. But I think I probably had some cushions from the grant and the fact that my overheads were possibly lower than somebody who would be looking to start a business who has a mortgage or has children to pay for or whatever. So I think I was quite fortunate in that regard.
I really do like the use of power, power assistive technology. I think that describes it beautifully, actually. And the fact that you thought that you could teach other people, is that part of your business now currently?
Yeah, so the business has, the commercial business has two kind of sides to it. We sell around about 100 products, a lot of which I use or I've used or I've tried out, or other people have tried out and think they're worth recommending. So it's kind of half sales and half training. So I spend most of my time training people how to use FusionSuite, and mainly FusionSuite, JSAGE, JDictate, a little bit of Supernova and Guide Connect, but not a great deal. It's mainly JSA and JAWS. So yeah, so there's two sides to the business. I think really you've got to be, if you're going to start out in business, you've got to be passionate about whatever it is you're intending to do. There's, it has to be a, kind of born out of a passion, really, an overgrown hobby almost, maybe, but that might be stretching it slightly. I think then it's maybe looking to see what resources are still available. I mean, as far as I know, things like the Prince's Youth Business Trust do still exist. Maybe getting some mentorship or something from somewhere, because I had a business mentor when I started, both from the Prince's Trust and from locally. I think you've got to know your stuff as well. So, when I'm encouraging, because we are very short of trainers nationally, and when I'm encouraging people, or if people are asking me, should I get into this? Really, I only want to be working with people who've got their accreditations. So you can get accredited for product knowledge for all the kind of main assistive technology packages like JAWS and Supernova. So get some credibility behind you, get some experience from somewhere. Somebody asked me a few weeks ago if they could come out and shadow me. I've not got a problem with that. There is enough work for everyone. In fact, there's probably too much work for everyone at the moment. As I say, we are particularly short of trainers in the UK in general. So they're the kind of things that I think even in 2022, coming off benefits and doing all the kind of the business admin type stuff. Again, I was talking to somebody recently who said, I'd love to be a trainer, but I don't want to do the invoicing and the VAT and all the business admin-y side of things. And that's a conversation it's ongoing, because I think that particular person will make an excellent trainer.
Yeah, that's really helpful and really useful to know for anybody who's considering starting up their own business. Absolutely brilliant recommendations for someone who's been self-employed for how long has it been now, Graham?
I think this is my 24th year Because we've had the anniversary. So yeah, 15th of March 1999. I can remember it like it was yesterday.
That's a wealth of experience and skill and expertise, and it's just amazing that you're here today sharing this with everybody.
Yeah, I think if you'd said to me, you know, back in 99 or when I was preparing, because I started preparing to launch in 98. So if you'd said, do you think it will last? I would simply have said, I've no idea. There were plenty of other people doing it at the time. And, you know, did I think I'd still be here doing it now? No, not necessarily. So
what are the key challenges that you faced in your time, do you think, being self-employed? What do you think the key barriers have been for you? And how have you overcome them?
I think being self-employed is it's very hard. It's very rewarding at the same time. It can be quite a lonely road to walk if you're a solo entrepreneur, a sole trader. You know, it doesn't have to be like that. Perhaps you can tap into, you know, and I work with some other entrepreneurs now. So the other leading trainers in the UK, we all kind of work together. But probably there were times when there just wasn't the work. There's always the risk of running out of work and actually, you know, ceasing trading because you just haven't got any work to do. So I would say, you know, probably 2012, possibly around about that time. I mean, obviously, we all think of 2008 as being when the austerity started and all the rest of it. But I would say around about 2012, a couple of contracts came to an end. And that was between 12 and 16 was probably quite difficult. You know, sometimes you have to convince Access to Work on an ongoing basis that you've got enough work for them to allow you to carry on, because now they are very, very much into, you know, you've got to meet minimum, you know, financial criteria to continue, and they want breakdowns of how much you're likely to make in a week or a month, whatever it is. I haven't done one for a while, but so, you know, that can be a challenge. But yeah, I would say they're the main ones really that I've actually experienced myself.
And what about COVID? How did that affect the business?
COVID was really strange. So pre-COVID, I was out and about probably 2 or 3 days a week, kind of running around the country, and then it all suddenly stopped. So it was a case of I had to shield. So it was a time to sit in the garden because the weather was nice and try and work out exactly how the business was going to carry on. So it was then a very steep learning curve to very quickly learn Zoom and Teams. And I used Jonathan Mosen's free Zoom audio tutorial. I listened to that a couple of times and got up and running on Zoom. And Freedom Scientific did some quite good stuff on, and Microsoft did some quite good stuff on Teams. And then everything went remote, and the assessors were getting through more work remotely. So we were getting more work through the training companies that we subcontract to. So we were actually doing more training in smaller amounts, which was better for a lot of our customers. So I would say we actually did certainly more training work during COVID. And also we had some very strange kind of spikes in sales of some of the equipment we do. So I think a lot of people were sat at home and they thought, yeah, let's label our CDs or our, you know, whatever. So we had a spike in the sale of the electronic braille dymo labeling machines. We had an increase in the sale of secondhand braille equipment, displays and printers, braille embossers. So I think a lot of people were, you know, sat at home producing more braille. There were other things that you know, the microspeak voice recorders and things like that the sales actually went up. So COVID was actually a really kind of unusual time, and I was shielding for 2/3 of it. So yeah, it was different, I'll put it that way.
Now, how different does the diary look now for you? Are you still doing, is it kind of 50-50 in terms of remote working and training and site visiting, or has it gone back to what you had? What's it like for you now in terms of delivering the training?
As always, there's no real pattern to it. However, I started going out and about again on the 1st of July last year. And it was about once a week, once a fortnight at that point up until January. Then we had a couple of large on-site jobs come in together. So then we were back to kind of pre-COVID levels, sort of 2-3 days a week out. And I would say at the moment, apart from next week, when again I'm going to be out pretty much all week, it's kind of probably has gone to about 50-50, maybe 60-40. But it does, it kind of swings one way and then the other and then goes back to the middle. It's a bit like a pendulum, really. We also, in the last 2 years, we picked up a complex needs job, which we work on site every Wednesday during term time. That will be up until July next year. And so that's every Wednesday on site and every Friday on Zoom. So that's a regular job. And we didn't have that pre-lockdown. So yeah, again, it's different.
So it sounds like you've got a really good balance there between face-to-face and remote working. I'm wondering, how easy is it to remotely train people? Because I know for me, prior to COVID, I wouldn't have really, you know, we did the odd bit of remote video calling in terms of treating patients and things, but I really kind of relate to what you're saying in terms of the remote working, because you had to learn very quickly when COVID came along about the Teams and Zoom and things like that. We weren't permitted to use Zoom. It had to be Teams for us. So I'm kind of more familiar with the Teams aspects of things. But now it's kind of like, I actually prefer to work remotely. I just think it's so much simpler and it's so much easier. And as a VI person, it's just, face-to-face is great, but when you think about all the travel that you're saving the customers and the patients, and you can actually reach out to people who, you know, who would struggle to come in. I mean, what are your thoughts on kind of how simple it is to work with people remotely with technology?
I think it's been very successful. And I would say the people that I've been out to see who won't do remote for whatever reason, it's for those that I've actually been out to see on site, it has been the right decision to actually go out and see them, apart from maybe one. But I completely agree with you. I mean, I think at one point I worked out that in a day and a half I'd done what it would take me to 5 days to have done if I was traveling. And you can be in three or four places in the UK in the same day. I mean, tomorrow I'm doing three remote sessions tomorrow. They are in three complete different parts of the country. They're in Derbyshire, London and Birmingham. Again, that would be 3 days out to do that on site. So I prefer it. How easy is it? I think when you're training somebody how to use something like JSay, you wouldn't be able to hear what was going on in their headset anyway. So I don't think really, unless you're almost sitting on top of them. So I don't think it actually makes a great deal of difference unless you're using, you know, a dual headset or something. But there are, I've had issues with getting it all to work properly with, you know, when you're using headset adapters. So I would say if you're in the room with somebody and you're training them how to use the voice input software, for those who aren't familiar with JSay or JDictate, you know, you can't hear what's going on in the headset anyway, so it doesn't really make a great deal of difference. And if you're training somebody how to use JAWS or something like that, then as long as their screen's shared, and that does apply to JSay and JDictate as well, by the way, for the feedback of the speech from JAWS or Fusion. So I'm not sure it makes a great deal of difference to those that are willing and capable of doing it. And that, as I say, that's not for everybody. Some machines we can't remote into because of security.
Yeah, absolutely. But it's great that this option exists for people who want to do it and who's, you know, it's great that those options are available to people, whether you want to have it remotely or, you know, in person. So I just think it's amazing that those options exist and are available for people, and we can offer them that choice.
I agree with you completely. I really do. It has really cut down on the traveling, and I haven't got a working guide dog at the moment either, so I'm back to using the cane. So, and I'm very stubborn when it comes to training. I don't usually use a support worker, so it's just me and the trains. It's different again to pre-COVID, even from a mobility point of view.
Okay, so what would you say the most popular products are with sight loss? Is there a particular product that stands out that you're selling more of, or that people are really interested in?
That's a really good question. I mean, from a training point of view, most of the training we do is subcontract for the big training companies. So that popular from an access to work point of view would have to always be, you know, Fusion, JAWS, JSay, a little bit of JDictate in what we do, and the Clover magnifiers. We sell quite a lot of those to access to work customers. On the kind of private home user side, what's popular is probably the more affordable things, like the Microspeak digital voice recorder, which is really popular. The Buzz Clip is gaining popularity. Again, the smaller Clover video magnifiers, so like the 5-inch one, that, you know, are quite well, I don't know if they're affordable or not at the moment, but, you know, kind of the sub £500 kind of items, really. And then secondhand, although we prefer to say refurbished, you know, we will literally source anything for people. So we've sold, again, kind of during COVID, really, but we've done quite a few, like, secondhand talking microwaves and kind of that sort of thing. So it's, this sounds a little bit kind of a cop-out, really, but there's almost no pattern to it. You know, you never know what you're going to sell until the phone rings, but or you get an email. But I would say of recent, that's just off the top of my head without looking through what we've sold, I would say that's probably most of it. But you get random requests, like people ring up and say, have you got a Goodman's, you know, talking set-top box from back in the day? And I just happen to have two downstairs, which have gone. But, you know, we get, we clear stuff for, we buy back from our customers and we clear redundant stuff from them. So it's, you never quite know what you're going to end up with either. But yeah, probably the, as I say, probably the more affordable end of the market, spectacle binoculars and that kind of thing.
Sounds really interesting. And sounds like there's still a really popular market for the specialist assistive technology products then.
Yes, there's definitely still a market. Obviously, when it comes to things like phones and tablets, a lot of people are using mainstream devices, possibly with, you know, if we look at Android, for instance, a lot of people will be using Synaptic. So they'll be using a mixture of mainstream and assistive. But a lot of people are using iPhones, iPads, and learning to use those from a kind of a real mixture of sources, really. So, yeah, for those that, again, it's right for, then there's certainly still a need and a demand for the assistive tech. And again, on the other hand, with universal design, there are now a lot of people kind of making more use of mainstream. And there's obviously a place in the private market for free or more affordable options, like, you know, screen readers like NVDA and even Narrator is a lot better than it was. It's not quite NVDA, but it's, you know, if you think of the price of JAWS when the special offers aren't on, you know, NVDA for you know, private user is a really, really good option.
Yeah, I know a lot of people do use NVDA. I personally haven't used it, but I do use JAWS both at home and at work. But yeah, that they are really good options because, as you say, affordability is really important, a very important factor for people, especially, you know, if they're really struggling, if they're on benefits, they don't have access to work or educational grants and things. So yeah, I think it's really important that the NVDA and Narrator options are available. I very rarely used Narrator myself. I tried to use it a few weeks ago on my nephew's laptop when I was trying to write something and I absolutely didn't get on with it. I just thought, I need my JAWS back.
I've had a mixture of experiences with it. I've had, you know, there are places in Windows where it reads well, and I was trying to do something with it on a machine a few weeks ago, and I can't remember exactly what it was now, but it was something slightly more advanced, and it just, in the end, I just said, look, you know, can I borrow a pair of eyes, because this isn't working. But the plus side of Narrator is it's now being written by two ex-screen reader programmers who are quite well known in the industry from kind of back in the day. So I think that's why it's made kind of leaps and bounds recently. NVDA is, I always put it on, if we're setting up a machine, I always put it on as a backup, because if your JAWS stops talking, rather than going to Narrator, you can very quickly launch NVDA. And it's a lot of the keystrokes, not all of them, but a lot of them are the same as JAWS or very similar to the JAWS commands. So you can have a good stab at using it if you're a JAWS user, because, as I say, a lot of the keystrokes are actually the same.
Okay, that sounds like a plan then. I think for both myself and for other people who are new to NVDA or who have JAWS but don't have that as a backup, it's a really good recommendation. So thank you for that. So you mentioned earlier about the mainstream technology and specialist technology kind of merging, like, say, for example, the Android with the TalkBack, the Apple with the VoiceOver. You know, I personally do love the accessibility on mainstream products. Is that kind of where you're seeing assistive technology heading then, in terms of you know, how you view it developing and progressing in the future?
I think those things are always going to evolve. I mean, I think those things are going to keep evolving, narrator will probably get better. I think because I'm mainly working in the kind of corporate field with the subcontract training that we do, I don't really see a move away from Windows in that regard. So again, you've got kind of two sides of the coin, really. I think for the immediate medium to certainly medium future, maybe long future, I think long-term future, I think, you know, the corporate's always going to be using Windows, whatever it's going to be. And at the moment it's 10 pretty much across the board. I think I've got one customer using 11. So I think I don't see Windows or Fusion or JAWS or anything like that going away anytime soon. But I think the private users are all still going to carry on using, you know, your Apple, your Android. Synaptic, I hope, will carry on being developed. I think there'll just be kind of a continued kind of natural evolution, really, of the kind of existing screen reading software for kind of the mainstream products, if you like. It's a bit of a two-sided coin, really.
Yeah, I think it's just simply brilliant, because as people who are visually impaired and blind, we've never had greater choice in mainstream products. You know, 20, 30 years ago, we couldn't have walked into an Apple store or an Android, you know, place and sort of, you know, think about what options. Now we've got multiple options, from blind shell specialist products to, you know, actually whether we want to go for Apple or Android. And, you know, the fact that it's accessible, some of it with Braille input stuff. I just think that this sort of thing is just so much more joint working with organizations. And the fact that organizations are bringing accessibility to the forefront, instead of it being an afterthought, it's actually really considered into their products. And that's what I really like about Apple and Android, as well as any other organizations who haven't thought about accessibility. You know, I think it's amazing if they can do joint working with either the Sight Loss Council, RNIB, Guide Dogs, you know, all the blind organizations that are around. The more joint working we can do together, the greater the profiles we can raise for blind and visually impaired, and the greater the choice we're gonna have.
Yeah, and I think, you know, just springing to mind are, you know, the voice guidance that's now available on some of the televisions. I've got an LG talking LG TV downstairs. The whole kind of smart speaker revolution that we haven't mentioned either. We mentioned the phones and the tablets just now, but we haven't mentioned like the smart speakers. But certainly, you know, the voice guidance that's on the TVs. And also, I'm understanding, I've not experienced it, but I gather there is some voice assistance or voice guidance now coming or available on some of the games consoles.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so time to wrap up now, Graham. So, you know, if people want to contact you to inquire about products, how would they do that?
Three ways of doing it. So we are available by good old-fashioned telephone landline on 01904 762 788. Email info@aspire-consultancy.co.uk, or the website is www.aspire-consultancy.co.uk.
That's wonderful. So thank you so much, Graham, for your time. It's been a real privilege to have you here sharing your experiences and empowering all of us blind entrepreneurs in the making.
I really appreciate you having me. Thank you very much.
That's it. That's all we've got time for here on Tech Talk. Thank you so much as ever for your company. Tasneem Arshad, thank you for your reports this week. We really appreciate you being around.
You're welcome. Bye for now.
And from myself, Dave Williams, and the rest of the Tech Talk team, bye for now.